Taylorism referred to the scientific management theories that have been promoted by the American efficiency expert and scientist of work, Frederick Winslow Taylor, through his so-called time motion studies of work, which had very carefully timed for maximum efficiency the movements of workers on the factory floor. Taylor's time motion studies and that entire philosophy of efficiency called Taylorism were adopted by Ford's moving assembly lines in his plants in 1914. Man and machine were to work together, speeding up production for maximum efficiency. As a result, utopian industrial planning solutions to human problems seemed attractive to many. One of the converts was the Russian revolutionary Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, who felt that Taylorism, joined to Marxism, might be exactly what was needed to drive humanity forward down the road of progress. Other critics worried that Taylorism and its ideas of efficiency came at a great cost, and that cost might be the potential dehumanization of workers subjected to such systems. Fritz Lang's classic film, one of the greatest films made, Metropolis, which appeared in 1927, a classic rendering of technological utopia, summed up the ambiguous views on Taylorism. This film depicted a utopia, a future technological society, which was productive, but which had radical differences in class and in social status. The lure that was held out in this film was the possibility that the immense productive capacity of industry that Taylorism promised could somehow be harnessed towards the goal of a true equality and a productivity that all could share in. Meanwhile, the negotiations for the settlements of Paris continued, and they, in some sense, would work to undercut many hopes for stability. At the 1919 negotiations in Paris, a severe peace treaty known as the Treaty of Versailles was drafted with Germany. Though many Germans had assumed they would be included in deliberations on the basis of Woodrow Wilson's democratic slogans, Germans were excluded from those negotiations and would have to wait to hear what had been decided. The treaty, when it came, shocked them. It stripped Germany of territories close to home. It stripped Germany of colonies, placed strict limits on its armed forces, required reparations to be paid, and anathema to most Germans, if not all, forced Germans to accept responsibility for causing the war, the so-called War Guilt Clause. The blockade which Britain had imposed upon Germany would remain in place until Germany signed. So, to the outrage of Germans, economic hardships continued. The news of the terms came as a crushing blow to Germans. In fact, there was an element of hypocrisy in their outrage, unconsciously, however, in that this treaty was far milder than the Brest-Litovsk Treaty which Germany had imposed on Russia when it had the upper hand. A fundamental problem which historians of late have been emphasizing is that many Germans didn't believe that Germany had truly been defeated. Its armies had continued to fight beyond Germany's borders. How could defeat have followed? The home front had held out and had not experienced the devastation that air war would bring in World War II. How then could defeat have followed? This hurried the spread of the so-called stab-in-the-back legend, which allowed German nationalists and generals to claim that the army had not been defeated on the battlefield, but rather had been betrayed by traitorous elements on the home front, blaming the scapegoated groups of Democrats, Socialists, Communists, and with a sort of grim predictability, given the anti-Semitism of some of these groups, German Jews, who in fact had participated patriotically in the defense of what they considered their fatherland. In spite of protests, German representatives signed the Versailles Treaty on June 28, 1919. This treaty had deep problems. The United States rejected the treaty, feeling that it too intimately bound America into the problems of Europe and did not join the League of Nations. So one of the great powers was out. Soviet Russia, as a revolutionary state, a pariah, an untouchable, also was not a member. With the United States and Russia not belonging, the two rising superpowers of their day were excluded. While defeated powers resented the settlement, some victors were not happy either.